Welcome to episode 19 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins. And as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well. Tough week for the Yankees. My birthday's tomorrow, so
Happy birthday.
Thank you. I'll be spending it at Citi Field.
It's not the best way to spend your birthday, but, you know, could be worse, I guess.
Yeah, it could definitely be worse. Subway Series is fun. I think I spent my 31st birthday last year also at Citi Field because the Yankees usually play the Mets around this time of year. But, yeah, it should be a fun match. I mean, the Subway Series is always fun, but the Mets are playing well right now, so it should have a little bit of extra juice behind it.
Yeah, and as everybody that's listening is well aware, the Yankees are not playing well. So let's just jump right into it. I think we're at the point in the season where the inevitable has happened, in the sense that the Yankees were playing so well and they didn't hit any bumps, I would say, until this stretch came in June, that this was bound to happen. And you're just going through a rough stretch. That's not to say that there aren't some issues with this team. And I know the word exposed has been thrown around a lot lately. It's exposed has turned into the new punt lineup for me, in terms of the roster and the weaknesses and blah, blah, blah. But in my opinion, and I'm curious what you think of this, I don't think anything's been exposed. That the issues that have popped up in these games are the issues we've been talking about since we started this podcast, really. And it's, they need another bat in the corner infield. Their bullpen's not good. And, you know, they've had really good injury luck so far. So I don't think, I don't think this is a huge issue. I know it came up in a couple games, the throwing with the catchers, but all those things are topics we've discussed multiple times as the season is going on. So I don't think anything's been exposed. It's just that other parts of the game have not been at the standard that they've set for themselves. And they played better teams that are capable of taking advantage of it. You know, I think it's a multitude of things that happens with a rough stretch. So what are your impressions of the last, I would say, 2 weeks, I guess, of the Yankees' performance?
Yeah, I mean, to use the word you used, exposed, I did write after the Orioles series that the Orioles exposed the bullpen for what it was. And shortly after writing that, you know, the Yankees obviously felt similarly about the state of their bullpen. They DFA'd Victor Gonzalez, which I was surprised with, honestly. Like, it wasn't that Gonzalez was, you know, good or anything. It was just he has a couple years of control left, and we've spoke about it before, but the Yankees usually don't like cutting guys who have multiple years of control. So that was a surprise for sure. But as far as like them losing games and series to the Orioles and Braves, is it a big deal? I think it matters for sure. And I think it's not concerning is the word, but it's maybe a little eye-opening that the Yankees have played two series against the Orioles. They're 2-5. They lost the series against the Braves. They lost the series against the Dodgers. Now those three teams are teams that could, you know, certainly win the World Series, and the Yankees haven't won any of those series. But again, it's series that are in the regular season. Not always what we see in the regular season happens in the postseason. So I think that is important to say. Just because the Yankees are 2-5 against the Orioles doesn't mean that they can't beat them in the playoffs, because the roster may look totally different by October. And it's not always the same team that you're going to roll out there in June as opposed to October. So I think that that's something that needed to be said. As far as everything else, you know, I think the lineup has gotten a little thin pretty quickly, honestly. Yeah. You know, the loss of Giancarlo, and we've said it before, but evaluating Giancarlo is very challenging because, you know, if he's not hitting home runs, what is he doing? But he was hitting a lot of home runs.
And not only that, he was hitting with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, he was hitting with runners in scoring position. He was one of their more clutch players this season. Like, he was playing well. So it is a loss for them. The middle of the order now has DJ LeMahieu in it. Gleyber Torres has, you know, not really done much as of late. Trent Grisham, obviously, he's not going to be someone that you rely on, but he actually has hit a little bit. Ben Rice, I've been impressed with in the limited amount of time that he's played so far. But really, once you get past, you know, the top four, it can get a little dicey pretty quickly, and it may be difficult to score against some of the better pitching staffs around. But, you know, I still think this is a good team. I still think they can win the World Series. I wouldn't panic that much if I was a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any panic. I think they've hit a rough stretch. I think the injuries are starting to pop up. I know Rizzo hasn't been very productive, so I don't know how much of a loss that is, to be quite honest. I think Rice has already been showing a little bit more than Rizzo has shown in the first 3 months or whatever of the season when he was playing. Rizzo's been a negative since the beginning. I think Rice has made a nice positive impact, and he's played good defense. I know that was one thing that people were concerned with, but he's been solid at first defensively. Really good eye at the plate. And the thing I like about Rice too is that it feels like he's controlling his at bats, and it's not like he was facing easy pitching since he's been called up. He got thrown right in the fire. So I think if he does that, the slugging will start to come. And then I think you have like a really nice piece that can lengthen the lineup a little bit. But I mean, there are issues here. You know, I don't think that people should be panicking, but I also don't think that there's the sentiment that everything's like perfect is also inaccurate as well. They definitely need another bat. And we've said this before, I believe, that there was some leash for DJ LeMahieu because he had just come back. He's dropped in the middle of the season. Everybody's been going. He's playing catch up. But if you're going to make moves like cut Victor Gonzalez, that tells me where the front office is at and how aggressive they're going to be in general. And I know that Boone said that they were going to platoon Rice and JD Davis, who was just picked up in a trade with Oakland. I think that's the wrong move. DJ LeMahieu should not be getting the majority of third base at bats unless you're doing two platoons on the corners, which also just shows that there's a problem here. But I mean, I would just play Oswaldo, DH, JD Davis most of the time and keep Rice at first. Rice has had good at bats. JD Davis is your kind of lottery ticket. Let's see what happens. LeMahieu's shown you what he is. He can't drive the ball. Everything's sitting to the ground. It, you know, you have to tread water now with everything that's going on. And to me, if you're going to tread water, you got to use the best available bats that you have. And I don't consider LeMahieu one of those bats right now. I've been a big fan of LeMahieu. I was for the contract when he signed it. Didn't know that he was going to have like two or three major foot issues once he signed this contract. So, you know, you can't see that happening. But I don't know. I just think that right now, with everything that's going on and the loss of Giancarlo Stanton and Gleyber Torres not producing at the levels that you would expect Gleyber Torres to produce at, it just feels really important to get whatever bats that you might have available that might have a chance to be productive to be productive. And I don't, again, I don't put DJ LeMahieu in that group at all. I think that he should be a guy off the bench right now, to be quite honest. Oswaldo's had a couple hits in the last couple days. Again, Rice has been pretty solid. And with JD Davis, if you acquire him, you're acquiring him to be a part of the lineup. So I'm not sure that I totally agree with the whole platoon thing. So, yeah, the platoon thing with JD Davis and Ben Rice doesn't make total sense to me. So that's my feeling on it. I think if you're getting JD Davis, then that means that LeMahieu should get less at bats more than consistent at bats.
I missed what you said.
I know. I was going on for a little bit. So basically, Chris fell off for a little bit. I was just basically reiterating my point that if you're bringing in JD Davis, there really is, I don't think that LeMahieu should be getting the majority of third base at bats. And you could just put Davis at DH, Oswaldo at third, and keep Ben Rice at first. Ben Rice has had good at bats, so I don't even know how you can. He's had him against both righties and lefties, so I'm not really sure you can justify turning him into a platoon player when it hasn't been an issue. So I'm not really sure why LeMahieu, outside of like veteran presence and defense, that you would be giving him the majority of the third base at bats.
It's because of defense. When he was in Oakland this season, JD Davis wasn't performing that well defensively at third base. He was much better at first base. That's honestly the reason why they're doing it. I totally agree with you. If we're just talking offensively, there's no reason why, you know, you wouldn't have a split with LeMahieu and whoever else you want to discuss. Honestly, at this point, they probably should consider just splitting DJ and Oswaldo at third base. Like, yeah. What has DJ shown? DJ shown nothing. I actually looked this up last night. There have been 395 hitters this year with at least 70 plate appearances. DJ has 76. There are only two out of the 395 who have zero extra base hits. DJ is one of them. And Daryl Hernandez with Oakland, who I did not know existed before yesterday. I'm sorry. I cover baseball. I did not know that guy existed. Yeah, there are only two. DJ's OPS is 465 this year, obviously not good at all. You know, I had tweeted it out during the Boston series, but at that time he only had, I believe, if I remember correctly, like four balls at over 300 feet this season. So like you said, like he's not driving the ball. You know, when he's at his best, he has gap-to-gap power. We have not seen that. There's nothing encouraging. And I know if I ask about DJ tomorrow during pregame and ask Aaron Boone, like, you know, essentially, like, why is DJ still playing? He's going to be like, well, you know, he hasn't played that many games. He doesn't have that many at-bats. We still believe in him. You know, he's a two-time batting champion. And it's like, all right, that's cool and all, but, like, there's nothing that we've seen this year that is encouraging so far from his at-bats. Like, I get the success he's previously had. I understand that. Like, I understand he was, you know, a really good hitter in his prime. Totally get that. But from what we've seen this year, it's like there's nothing there. It's the same thing that, like, you know, when I would ask about Rizzo, be like, yeah, we believe in Rizzo. You know, look at the back of his baseball card. And again, it's like, that's cool. But like, what does that have to do with this year? And right. From what we've seen, it's like, if you're not performing well, does it matter that you in 2011, you were good? What does that have to do with anything?
Nothing. And I subscribe to the back of the baseball card thing. If a guy in that present season is still showing or creating evidence that that player still exists.
Like Aaron Judge in April.
Right, exactly. So, excuse me, if there are indicators that you can point to where you can see that some of those traits, characteristics are still there, there's some, you know, luck stuff that's going on, or there's like one identifiable issue that you can see, but like other things are pretty much within or around career norms, cool, then you can say back of the baseball card, and that would be a valid statement. That's not true with LeMahieu at all. Like, I can count on one hand how many at-bats that resulted in him hitting the ball hard in the outfield. Like, even if it went 300 feet, less than 300 feet, more than 300 feet, I'm just talking about, like, hitting it hard somewhere, like, on a line. One was in Boston, and I think one or two was this past week. Like, everything's a ground out. Everything. And it's just like, at some point, he's telling you what he is at this point. You know, like, he can't square a ball up right now. And some of that obviously is attributed to missing all that time. And again, foot issues are some of the worst injuries you can have in all of sports. I don't care what sport it is. Like, everything starts with your feet and goes up from there. Especially true with baseball when you hit, like with the kinetic chain and all that stuff, blah, blah, blah. But some of it has to go beyond all of that. I mean, he can't square the ball up. So, I'm not sure if defense is enough of a reason to justify keeping a guy in when your bigger issue right now is offense. Like, I think the Yankees defense has been fine. Like, there haven't been stretches outside of the stolen base attempts where things have stood out to me where I'm like, man, this defense looks horrible. You know, they had like one or two stretches earlier in the season where defense popped up, or bad defense popped up. But the issue right now is like the lineup and length of lineup. So I'm not sure defense really should be factoring into this. That's just me. I mean, just given the situation that they're in right now, losing Stanton, you know, Soto's not hitting well right now. He's in a little slump. We can get to that in a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think LeMahieu should be playing. I mean, you're just adding on to the issue right now, in my opinion.
I totally agree. I haven't seen anything encouraging with LeMahieu. Like, I don't know. It's the same thing like when we were talking about Rizzo when he was playing. It's like, I don't know what to point to say, oh, yeah, like, he's going to turn it around. Like, and the thing about hitting the ball hard, which he's done a little bit, hitting the ball hard is good, but if you're just hitting the ball into the dirt, it doesn't mean anything, because we're talking about major league infielders who can gobble that stuff up. Like, you know, that's one of the more frustrating parts about Stanton is, you know, if he can put the ball in the air more often, like, he would be unstoppable. But he's been a high ground ball hitter throughout his career, and that's the frustrating part, because he can hit the ball 120 miles an hour, which we just saw last week. That and the ball that he hit 120, like, almost decapitated Anthony Volpe when he was around in third. Yeah. But yeah, like, hitting the ball hard is obviously good and what you want to do. But if your launch angle is, you know, negative 25 degrees and the ball's, you know, in the infield dirt, well, that doesn't mean anything. Right. Like, it doesn't, just because, you know, we're in the major leagues. Like, maybe if we're discussing Little League, and, you know, Little League infielders are going to have a hard time with any ball that's hit hard, but this isn't the case. Like, hitting the ball hard is useless if you're just pounding it into the dirt, which is what he's been doing. Right. Like, I think it was the Apple broadcast on Friday was like, oh yeah, like, that's a great piece of hitting by DJ LeMahieu. He hits to second base and Jemai Jones, I think, scored to give the, I think they gave the Yankees the lead at the time. But yeah, that's what we've seen out of LeMay. I don't think he like tried to do that. I think that's just what
right.
that's what he does. So I don't think he was like, oh wow, that's a really nice piece of hitting by LeMay. No, that's just what he does now. Like that's
right, he can't do anything else. Right.
That's all he does. So
right.
I don't know what they do. You know, he still has a couple years left on his deal. He has money owed to him. The Yankees have previously shown that they're not comfortable cutting a player with the kind of money that he is still owed. It seemed like from last season, if we're just judging off of that, and in years past with when they've cut players with A-Rod and Ellsbury and whoever, but it seemed like that 25 to 27 million range is the spot where they'd be like, all right, like we're cool eating this, you know, have a nice rest of your career. We haven't reached that point yet with LeMahieu, if I'm not mistaken. Let me look it up while you talk.
I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think he's getting cut. I mean, I think they really like LeMahieu, and to his credit, he still plays strong defense. So, you know, in some of the other instances with guys that have been cut with Ellsbury, I mean, we all know that the guy didn't exist after a while. He like probably died. And then Hicks wasn't hitting or playing defense. Like there was just no value with some of these guys. So it gets to a point where I guess you hit that sweet spot of money that they're willing to eat. And then they say goodbye. LeMahieu's playing good defense. So he still has some value to the team.
The one thing I would say about that though, is, you know, Josh Donaldson was playing good defense too. And they cut his ass.
Yeah. But Josh Donaldson was also like an asshole. I mean, I think,
yes, he was for sure.
I think that they were, I mean, yes. You would know because you're closer, but I mean, the things that you have talked about with Donaldson, but also like things that I've heard from people that like work in the league and like have come across and like, you know, there was probably like time to just say, get rid of the asshole as much as it was get rid of like the not good baseball player anymore.
Yeah, 100%. And while you were talking, I did look it up. We're about at game 81 right now. So DJ is owed around $37 million over the next 2 years, 2.5 years, if we're counting this one. So we're probably not at the point where they'd be like, you know what? We're cool. We'll eat this money. Maybe they change their mind, but from just judging off of past, you know, times where this has happened, where someone has really underperformed and it's clear that it's probably not going to be turning around, you know, $37 million seems like a little high for the Yankees right now.
Yeah. I mean, if we go by what Boone is saying, then he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, too.
He's going to play. Yeah. You know, not only is he not going to get cut, he's going to get the majority of a bet. So,
I mean, Boone loves DJ. And if there's anyone that believes in DJ in the organization, it is Boone. Like, DJ is one of his favorite players. So, yeah, like, we're talking about cutting, talking about demoting. Like, I feel like it would take a lot for it to get to that point. Even though it looks like the right decision right now to do that, I just feel like, knowing how the organization feels and knowing how Boone feels specifically, like it would take a lot for it to get to that point. And it would be a hard decision too, if they did do it, honestly. Like, you know, you can look at the numbers and obviously they're not good, but it would be a hard move for Boone to make.
Yeah. I mean, to me, this is more a conversation of how much playing time does he get versus is he going to stay on the roster? I mean, I don't think he's going anywhere, but I've said this a couple of times already. It just feels like if you're bringing in a player that plays the corner infield, that gives you a little bit more flexibility and the DH spot is open to like limit LeMahieu's at bats. It's just, I'm not sure how that's helping right now. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. He probably has a longer leash than one would expect. Or if you're going off of performance, what you would assume someone with that level of or lack of performance should get. But it feels like he's built up a lot of goodwill and respect from Boone that will allow him the opportunity to see if he can get out of it. So just going to have to navigate that, I guess. All right. So after the break, we'll talk a little bit about Soto and then wonder if the Yankees have actually been exposed during this stretch. We'll be right back after this break. And we're back. It's Randy. It's Chris. It's the Views from 314 Feet podcast. So we're going to ask this question that we kind of hinted at in the first segment. This idea of the Yankees being exposed over this 2-week stretch. And I believe it's 2 weeks since the Dodger series started. My time might be off a little bit, but from the Dodger series to now, do you think the Yankees have been exposed or have been shown to be frauds? Another popular word that a lot of people like to use when a team is not playing well at the moment.
No, but, you know, I think it does highlight some areas that, you know, may have overperformed or has just shown a brighter light on areas that need to be improved. You know, like I'll start with like the starting pitching. You know, the starting pitching, you know, ERA wise was great. You know, I think for a while they had the best ERA for any starting rotation in baseball. Maybe the Phillies had a better one, but if it was the Phillies or the Yankees, they were in top two in starter rotation. But like, if you look deeper at the metrics, like ERA, again, it's not like the best indicator of like how well a pitcher is performing, because that can always fluctuate. But if you looked at like the deeper metrics, FIP, expected FIP, you know, strikeout to walk ratio, all those, like the Yankees were kind of like in the middle of the pack as far as starting rotations. And that's what what we've seen over this stretch against the Orioles, the Dodgers, not the Dodgers, but the Braves. Their starting pitching hasn't performed like their ERA would suggest. You know, I think Carlos Rodon has definitely benefited by having a good defense behind him. Cause like, if you looked at his deeper metrics, you're like, damn, like this guy is, I think he had like an under 3 ERA, but the deeper metrics would suggest that he shouldn't have this kind of ERA. Marcus Stroman pitched well against the Braves, but he's another one where his metrics, and maybe because, you know, he doesn't have, you know, the stuff that others have, but, you know, he's been hit hard a lot this year. I think the last time I checked, his FIP before this start was like almost 5, which is not good. And then Luis Gil, obviously he has been incredible this year, but it was probably, he was probably due for a little regression. Like his BABIP was super low, and that's partly because, you know, he wasn't generating a lot of hard contact. I don't know if I expected him to get bombed the way he did against the Orioles, but, you know, it would have been miraculous if he went the entire year without some sort of blow up performance. It just happened to be in a big spot against the Orioles. But the starting pitching, you know, has definitely been one area where they've overperformed, and it was probably time for some regression. As far as like the lineup and stuff, I don't know how they're going to improve the lineup right now. The options they have internally on the bench are pretty bad, honestly. Like the bench, like the in total, the bench is just, it's not in a good spot right now. It's not one that inspires much confidence, even after, you know, signing JD Davis. Like even JD Davis, he has a 98 WRC plus this year with Oakland. And, you know, obviously that's below major league average, but it's better than what they have now on the bench, better than what they have in some spots currently starting, namely DJ. So, you know, it is what it is. I don't know how they improve the lineup right now, other than, you know, Judge and Soto continue to be two of the best players in the sport. which is what they've done basically for the entire season. Giancarlo's out, so you kind of need someone in the middle of the lineup to pick it up. I just don't know who that person's going to be. Like, I think Ben Rice has the potential to be a good hitter, but you're asking a lot for someone who has played under 10 major league games to be that force in the middle of the lineup. You know, ideally it would be Glaber. I just don't know what you can expect of Glaber on a day-to-day basis. You've already discussed DJ in depth. The catchers are, you know, whatever, like you're not going to be expecting much. Trent Grisham's not going to be that guy. You know, Oswaldo, when he plays, is not going to be that guy. It's a tough spot for sure for the Yankees right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's moments of concern right now. I think there's a reason why, or there are reasons why they've kind of had this tough stretch. And I just want to say this too. It's not necessarily because they're playing good teams. Like, that's not the only reason. Like, that is part of the reason. The teams that they're facing are good enough to take advantage of kind of the missteps that they're taking and, you know, the injuries. Like, one game Judge isn't there. Soto wasn't in the Dodgers series. Those teams are good enough to take advantage of those things. But that's not the sole reason why they're not playing as well. They're just not playing as well, and they don't have, like, the same personnel available to them. The Yankees are still have the second most wins against teams with a 500 record or better. So it's not this thing that all of a sudden the schedule got more difficult and then the Yankees just couldn't beat anybody. That's obviously part of it, because these teams are capable of taking advantage more so than teams that aren't as good as they are. But a lot of these games are close too. I mean, I think that also needs to be a reminder here that the Yankees lost one game against the Orioles in extra innings where they didn't have Judge. The first game they didn't have Judge, and pretty much didn't have Judge when he got hit, and they won that game. The game with Heel was just terrible, which was also a terribly pitched game. Like, I think it was Irvin for the Orioles. He was also terrible. That was just like a terribly pitched game. Like, the Yankees were worse, obviously, but Irvin was also terrible. The Braves series, two of the three games were close. Or the last game was close. It was 3-1. They just couldn't get a big hit, you know. So it's not like they played these teams and all of a sudden they turn into pumpkins. Like, there's all things. There are, like, correlations with, like, playing a good team that's able to take advantage, and also some things, like, not going well for the Yankees. Like, you know, they're starting to lose players. I don't think they necessarily played clean baseball either, which didn't help. Like, I think when you're playing these teams and you have to kind of overcome some issues that are going on, you have to play clean baseball. And the Yankees haven't done that, whether they're actually registered as errors or not. It's just like baseball IQ stuff that was going on that I don't think helped. Obviously, the throwing from the catcher position, but also just like decisions on where to throw the ball. Base wise on certain base hits or certain like situations that the Yankees just made bad decisions on. Again, I go back to the Judge throw with Duran, how he just kind of loafed to the ball and Duran took advantage. I believe Verdugo threw to the wrong base in one of these games with Baltimore. I think there's something that I can't remember all of it right in front of me. I don't have notes. There was definitely a play where one of the outfielders threw to the wrong base and the runners were able to advance and that runner scored. It's just they just have not played clean baseball. Soto missing that ball that went over his head. You know, I think there's just like a bunch of things going on right now where I wouldn't say that they're exposed in any way. I just think they're playing not great baseball, which happens. They've had some injuries. And then there's been some course correction going on. It just happened to be bad timing. Like, I feel like they would have lost some of these games to teams that were playing under 500 if they played them as well. I just don't think that they have been playing well or up to the standard that they've established like earlier in the season. So I don't think there's any exposing going on, because it's not like they've been embarrassed. In the majority of these games, they've had one or two blowouts, but It's not like they've looked like inferior to these teams. It's just like little things here and there, and like little baseball plays have also mattered, and not hitting with runners in scoring position during these games as well has also popped up. So, I mean, I think they'll get back to what it is, but I will say the lineup and the length of the lineup is like a concern for me. I just don't know where, like you said, who's going to step up to kind of offset the responsibility that Judge and Soto carry. And I know some people will say, well, they'll go back to the 2023 thing. Like, this is 2023 with Soto or whatever. It's not that. It's just like certain guys aren't there. Like, some guys are underperforming, but also like now you're missing guys, which also contributes to it. So I don't know. It just feels like one of those like baseball stretches where things are just not going your way, and you're also contributing to it not going your way. You know, they're not absolved from their performance lately.
The one thing I'll say after the Orioles series, I like the depth of their lineup more than I like the Yankees.
I agree.
Was with Giancarlo in the lineup. I just think like 1 through 9, like they're tough.
Yeah, I agree.
They're tough. Like I don't feel similarly about the Yankees lineup 1 through 9. I think the Orioles bullpen is better, even besides Craig Kimbrell, who the Orioles need to address that, especially like if they're serious about winning a title. Like, you can't go in October with Kimbrell in 2024 as your closer. He's not the guy anymore. Yeah. They have to address that. But the only thing I feel like was quote unquote exposed, which is like what I said, is the bullpen. But we knew that we knew they had to improve the bullpen. It was just a matter of when they decided that they needed to do it. Because we've been talking about the bullpen since April, where, you know, they didn't have that many trusted guys in their pen. And, you know, at least to the front office's credit, like, they obviously realized, like, we got to do something about this bullpen, because they cut Gonzalez pretty early. Like, you know, several weeks before the trade deadline is even here, they cut him. So I think that was at least encouraging, that they realized that they needed some reinforcements. Whether or not they work out, you know, you obviously never know. You know, they signed Tim Hill, who was DFA'd by the White Sox. He came into that terrible Orioles game where they scored 17 runs in Luis Gil's start, gave up a 3-run homer. Who knows if that's going to work out? They called up Yoendris Gomez, who I thought was awesome Friday night. He's really good. Who came in for relief of Carlos. He was awesome. He actually like saved the bullpen.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, he looks good, and I think he may give the bullpen some whiffs, which obviously we've discussed so many times. They need strikeouts. You know, he has strikeout stuff. They signed Phil Bickford, probably a guy who is easily replaceable in the next couple of weeks, if and when they trade for new arms or they get arms in off of injury. You know, Scott Efros is, you know, nearing a return probably in the next 2-ish weeks. He'll be back if everything continues to go well in his rehab assignment. JT Brubaker is someone who could move to the bullpen. I know they're trying to build him up as a starter, but, you know, if you can build a pitcher up as a starter, it's not necessarily a bad thing. There's just obviously not a spot for him in the rotation right now. So if they wanted him on the major league roster, which they do, you know, it makes sense to have him in the bullpen as well. So like there are arms coming in the next couple of weeks, and there will likely be arms coming externally ahead of the trade deadline who obviously don't know that right now, likely not going to know until they actually make moves. But I think it was encouraging to see them be a little aggressive with the bullpen just because of how poor it's been, especially in these last several weeks now.
Man, they need a bullpen makeover. I mean, I know we did the live stream and someone had asked, like, what was the bigger concern, corner infield in the bullpen or the bullpen. I said the bullpen, and I might have even said, like, I can't stand this bullpen or something. I it's terrible. And they need a makeover. And I it feels like they realize that as well, and that they're putting themselves in a position to start that transition, because it's bad. I mean, it's a bad bullpen. I don't think that there's any debate anymore, and the Yankees have acknowledged it. I think if there's another person that could potentially be on the chopping block, it's Caleb Ferguson. That's been a terrible trade. That has not worked. I just feel like they need multiple external arms, and they have to hope that guys like Brubaker and Efros can help them right away. But that is the one area that has to look different after the trade deadline. Like, just new faces. There might be two or three guys, three or four guys that you can keep around from what you have now. But when that trade deadline passes, it has to look different. Like, remarkably different. Because that bullpen is terrible. It's not good enough. It hasn't been good all season. And we've been talking about it, and people would point to ERA and like all these other things. And it was like, nah, man, this bullpen stinks. It's not good enough. There's like one absolute that you need in a bullpen, and they're not good at it. And now it's gotten worse. And now they can't even throw a strike. They couldn't strike anybody out. And now they can't throw a strike outside of two or three guys. And your closers having like a moment of regression from earlier in the season. And your second best or third best reliever is Michael Tonkin. And it's like, it's a great story, but he shouldn't be your second or third best reliever. Like, that's ridiculous. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, like that's not good enough if you're trying to win a title. So, yeah, the bullpen turns me into like angry Twitter guy.
I hear you. You're raising your voice. Do we need to go to break?
Nah, we're good. I'll calm down a little bit. It's just like every time like a new guy comes in, it's just like, this is not going to go well. And it's been true for like a while now.
Yeah. I mean, to their credit, like, they got rid of Dennis Santana. Obviously that wasn't working. And they did it like pretty much immediately during that Dodger series. It was like, all right, like, that's enough with Dennis Santana. We've seen enough.
You gotta go, man.
Yeah. I mean, Victor Gonzalez, you know, he's one of the guys who was, you know, having problems throwing strikes and throwing it to the spots where he was trying to throw it to. They got him out of there. So, yeah. I mean, again, to the front office's credit, at least they're being, you know, cognizant of the fact that this bullpen's not good enough. We got to try something different. Not to say Tim Hill or Phil Bickford's going to be the answer or whoever might come in, but, you know, change is necessary. You don't know if someone's going to work out, especially in the bullpen, until like they're actually in your organization. It's like one of the spots in baseball where like you just never know how it's going to work out. Because like if I told you Michael Tonkin's going to emerge and be, you know, their third best reliever, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
No way. Especially after like he pitched his first outing was that Brewers game where he came in extra innings and everybody, you know, had a heart attack online about the Yankees and like throwing games and point shaving and all that.
Right.
And you know, since then he's been awesome.
Right.
But, like, so like you just don't know how a guy is going to turn out in the bullpen until like you actually use them.
I will say this because you brought up the Orioles. The Yankees gained a game since that series. So things have not been going great, but there is one positive that they've actually gained a game in the standings because the Astros took care of the Orioles in Houston. And I totally agree that Baltimore's lineup has better depth. I think that series definitely showed that, and it's more difficult to navigate 1-9 with the Orioles than it is the Yankees. I think getting through Judge and Soto is still tougher than whatever combination of players the Orioles have. So in that sense, when you compare the two lineups, especially right now, they're definitely top heavy, the Yankees. But I will say, we had the rant last week that a lot of people enjoyed. I still don't see to me, they're even, the Yankees and the Orioles. Like, the Orioles have issues as well. And, you know, they can't pull ahead of the Yankees, who have had issues, you know, and are going through like certain things. And Kimbrel's one of them. I think their starting rotation's another one. I know that they've had injuries, but I don't think that I think the Orioles have things that they also have to worry about. Like, they didn't pitch well in Houston. And I know Houston's hot, but I just feel like, you know, if we're talking about the two teams, I just feel like they're even. I don't think one is necessarily ahead of the other. And I think that the standings reflect that. I think statistics reflect that in totality. It just feels like one, they're just basically two really good teams that are not going to be able to pull away from each other. Most likely they both have very strong strengths and very clear weaknesses to me. And I feel like this is just what's going to happen throughout the season with them. Like, it's just a good old rivalry and competition between two really good teams. You know, like, I know that there's a tendency for a fan to criticize his or her own team more than the other good team. But I think if you take a step back, they're even. You know, I think that they're two top contenders that happen to be in the same division that have some strengths, have some weaknesses. And a lot of it, as we keep saying, will come down to how they treat the trade deadline and how they can improve their rosters. And I think both teams will. It's just how many of their weaknesses can they address on both sides to get ready for that stretch run.
The one thing I'll say, I've said it before, I'll likely say it again in the next few weeks. The one thing that would scare me if I was part of the Yankees or a fan of the Yankees is the Orioles can make any move they want. And if they do that, not deplete their minor league system. Like, right. It is completely loaded. It's on a different stratosphere than any organization in baseball. They have so much talent. So if they wanted to make any move they wanted, they can do it. And they can also control the trade deadline just because of how much talent they have.
Let me ask you this, though, because I'm in total agreement with you. Has that front office shown a willingness to do that, though?
I mean, they traded for Corbin Burns.
Right. Okay. Because that was the one thing that I think had to be done, because their rotation would have been.
Yeah. I mean, they needed an ace, but like, they've shown that they are willing to, one, trade for someone who's going to be a free agent. Two, they've said the right things when it comes to possibly paying him in the offseason. Burns himself has said that, you know, he's at least open to it, which obviously he's going to. He's not going to cross off any team. But at least they've shown that they are willing to part with some of their top players, which is what they did with the Brewers.
All right. Yeah, I guess with the new ownership, it's a little bit different now.
Yeah, and that's also something to consider. With the old ownership group, you know, I would have said that they would likely hold on to some of these younger guys. With new ownership, you know, every new owner gets that disease where they have to, like, pay everybody and trade everybody. It's like they all – every single sport, they all get that disease where they just have to, like, pay everybody. And, you know, that's how you sometimes get into big problems. So, yeah, like, they have a new ownership group. The new ownership group is probably going to spend more than the Angelos family. The Angelos family just, I don't know what their issue was, but they just weren't taking payroll seriously. Like, the Orioles should have had a much better team going into the playoffs last year, honestly, with the amount of talent they had and the amount of promise they showed of, like, possibly winning the title. Like, the Orioles had a really good team, and they, if they would have made a couple of moves. They probably go into October as the favorite, but they just didn't do it. Just from talking to people, I don't get the sense that this ownership group is just going to be relaxed. I think they're going to try and make a name for themselves pretty much immediately. So I would be surprised if the Orioles were not aggressive ahead of the trade deadline. And also, if they wanted to make big moves, like I said, I think they're not opposed to doing that.
Oh, yeah. I was curious what you thought. I think they'll make at least one big move. I mean, they kind of have to.
Yeah, they need to.
I mean, I know some Yankees fans want to put them on a pedestal for some reason, but they have issues too. And I think
every team has issues. The Dodgers have issues.
Yeah.
The Braves have issues. Like the Braves could, you know, they lost Acuna. Michael Harris is hurt. Like they could use another bat. The Yankees, we've obviously discussed them ad nauseum. The Dodgers could use some help. Like they could use another bat, honestly, even though they have the best offense. They could use some help out of the bullpen. Every team has flaws. No team is perfect.
Right.
It's just a matter of how much better can you make yourself before the trade deadline passes. That's the game right here. Because that could be the difference between, you know, being, you know, in the mix as a contender as opposed to going into October as the clear front runner. Like one of these teams that we're talking about, the Orioles, the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Phillies, I'll put the Braves in there. They're probably a step down. But if one of those teams makes a couple moves at the trade deadline, it could really be the difference between, you know, winning a title or not. Like they're all in that group that could win a title. It's just a matter of how are they going to address their weaknesses.
Yeah, I mean, the Yankees have put themselves in the mix. So,
yeah, they're firmly in the mix. No matter what happened this past week, they're still one of like the five or six teams that could win it all in October.
All right. So before we go to break, I just wanted to quickly address one thing that's starting to arise online in this whole let's start criticizing Juan Soto. Because he's not hitting like 10 home runs a week or something. And Juan Soto is still doing Juan Soto things. I think he has like a 458 on base percentage or something over the last 10 games, something ridiculous like that. I know people wanted to connect the forearm issue with his lack of production, but it just feels like just having a bad stretch that also includes like a almost 500 on base percentage, you know, not going to hit all the time. And I think just hunting for things to be mad about is a little over the top, especially when it comes to Soto and he's on base almost 50% of the time. I mean, that feels like a little ridiculous to me.
Yeah. I mean, in June, I'm looking it up. He has a 191 WRC plus in June. He has a 494 on base percentage.
Oh, it's 494. My bad. I like undersold him.
In June. If we look at it from after the Dodger series, he's not hitting for average. He 225 average, but he still has a 466 on base, 151 WRC plus. Now I know a lot of people are going to be like, well, that's because he's walking. And like, you know, I get the point. I get the point they're making, but if you have a 466 on base percentage, like there's not much to complain about. Like you're getting on base.
Right.
Like I get it. He's not, you know, driving runs in, but you know, he does have Judge right behind him. You know, I don't know what fans are looking for there. Is he hitting the ball out of the ballpark lately? No. You know, since the Dodgers series, he has that one home run in Boston that just cleared the Green Monster. He's still good.
I mean, I think some of it's just like he's just missing pitches that he normally hits, which happens in a season. I mean, like it's just when he like makes swing decisions, he's just not making as much contact. And I think he's expanded the zone a little bit when he swings. But that just seems to be normal. Like that's baseball. Like I don't know. I think it's people just stirring up stuff to just be mad because they just want to get attention or something. So.
I wouldn't be concerned about Soto. It's like the same thing with Judge in April. These guys have shown that they're more than capable of turning it around very quickly. So I wouldn't be concerned. Like if we're talking about this July 24th and it's kind of the same thing, okay, like then we can have a conversation. But, you know, he still has a 191 WRC plus in June.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So we're going to head to the mailbag after this break, and then we'll wrap things up. And we're back. It's mailbag time. We have about 4 questions to answer. So we'll start off with Steven Titans. Having attended today's game, which was yesterday's game now, and watching the Yankees score one measly run, I've decided a tear down is in order. Become the third team to trade Soto. See what you can get for Nestor. Really tear this thing down to the studs and build around, I don't know, Oswaldo. Everybody wants to rant now, except for Steven. So, being serious, now that the team is beginning to shuffle the last spots in the bullpen and the back of the bench. I'm here. Oh, my Siri just went off. I have too many computers here. Being serious, now that the team is beginning to shuffle the last spots in the bullpen and the back of the bench with J.D. Davis and Ben Rice, is there another small move you can see the team making outside of the big moves like Ryan McMahon? Is there a smaller bench bat out there you'd covet? Love the pod. Reading the rant last week was amazing.
I don't necessarily have like a name off the top of my head. The one player who I think would make a big difference for the Yankees who would start is Luis Renjifo, the Angels third baseman. Good on base, hits for average, has speed, which the Yankees could use a little bit more of. The one thing, he doesn't play defense all that well. He plays multiple positions, but it's partly because he doesn't play one position well.
He's a bad defender.
Yeah, he's a bad defender, but he would make a difference in the lineup.
Oh, yeah, he would for sure, yeah.
You know, I think the Yankees should try and get a bigger bat. He's not, like, going to hit for power or anything, but, you know, he has a near 800 OPS. Like, he does a lot of good things that would help the Yankees. He would be someone, if I was running the team, who I would try and target, because I don't think the cost would be that high. It's not going to be like the same as, you know, some of these other big bats that are out there. I don't think it would cost that much.
I would, if you're going after Renjifo, I feel like it should be Renjifo plus another bat, because Renjifo could kind of be the guy that bounces around and would just be a huge pain in the ass in the lineup. Like, sometimes over certain seasons, you play teams that have really good players that you know are their stars, and then they have like one or two guys that are good, and they're also a big pain in the ass. Like, they get the big hit, or they get a big walk, or they just do something, and they like constantly pop up in these series. And Renjifo feels like he could be one of those guys for the Yankees. That, like, you get through the top part, and then all of a sudden he's there, like, getting a big hit or just doing something that's positive for the team, and you kind of, like, undersold him a little bit because of who else is in the lineup, not because he's not a good hitter. But he just feels like one of those guys. Like, even when they play the Angels, like, he's had certain situations when they played the Yankees. Like, this guy's a pain in the ass, and why does he keep getting this, like, big hit, or he's in the middle of something? But I don't think he would be enough because of the defense. Like, I don't think he could be your everyday third baseman, because what he would give you offensively, he would take away defensively. So I think he would have to get at-bats, obviously, but I don't know if, like, that's enough to, like, really address the bat thing. Like, to me, it would be Renjifo plus – maybe not like another big bat like McMahon, because the cost might be too much for both of them. But it feels like you would need to bring at least one other bat in to, like, really address the offensive issues that they have. Just because I don't know where he would play consistently. You know what I mean? Like, he's a bad defensive player. So you have to factor that into it. I don't think he's bad enough where you don't try to bring him in. It just feels like you need one more piece if you bring Renjifo in.
Yeah.
He's good. I like Renhifo, but
yeah, his defense is really bad. He's one of the worst defenders in baseball. So that alone, you know, the Yankees definitely prioritize defense. That alone may exclude him from him being a target for the Yankees. But, you know, I do think that the thinking is they need another bat in the order.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's a good one. And he provides different things that they do like or should try and add, which is speed. You know, he's another very high contact bat. He just seems like you said, he just seems like if you had him in the order in October, that it would present problems for opposing pitchers, which is what you're trying to do in October.
Right. Yeah. Renhifo would be good. I mean, this isn't happening, but I said this before. If they were to get Paredes, I'd be extremely excited, but I don't think that's happening.
I mean, it could. You just have to trade, you know, multiple top prospects and.
Yeah, that's why
I don't see it.
I don't see that. That's why I don't see it happening. You're not going to face Spencer Jones in your division for the next 6 years.
Yeah, like it would probably have to start with Spencer.
Yeah. And with Dominguez's injury, which we didn't even talk about, I mean, I don't see them getting rid of Jones anytime soon. I don't think they were going to anyway, but, I mean, they have to kind of protect themselves now with Dominguez being out. So.
Yeah, and also, like, with Jones – Hal Steinbrenner said it himself, like he doesn't want to trade him.
Yeah.
So that just
that's the end of that.
Yeah. Right. It's like, all right, cool. We know that he's not getting traded.
All right. The next two questions surround third base. So PT Tierney asked about DJ LeMahieu's leash at third base. We kind of covered that. But also Frank Strange asked, is there a chance Cabrera takes over third base sooner or later?
I don't see it, like, from what we said. You know, unless things get so bad, and they're bad already, but even worse than maybe, but it still seems like they prefer Cabrera to be in that utility role. Whether that's the right decision or not, you know, it's not my call to make, but as I said, they should really consider splitting time between DJ and Oswaldo at third. Oswaldo's not a great hitter, obviously, but so is DJ. Like, DJ's also bad. So maybe you catch lightning in a bottle with Oswaldo like you did at the start of the season. There is definitely a considerable drop in defense between the two of them. Like, you never feel confident when the ball hits Oswaldo at third. You just don't.
Yeah,
like
That was another play. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but you just reminded me. I think it was Oswaldo. The decision to, instead of getting the easy out at first, he threw the ball to second on a ground ball, and the runner was safe at second, and then it like led to more runs. That was a terrible decision. Like, as soon as he let the ball go, I was like, this guy's safe at second. What are you doing? And then like, led to runs in the inning. And it was just like, just play clean baseball. Just get the out. Just get the out. Like, that was another one that I forgot about. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just like they don't have a great option right now. Like, Oswaldo's he fell off pretty hard after the first couple of weeks, which was bound to happen. Like, he was performing at the same level as Juan Soto.
Right.
Like, no one thought that was going to continue. But yeah, I mean, I don't know what they do at third base. It's already bad, and they seem committed to playing DJ for the foreseeable future.
All right, guys. We didn't give you a preview, so we have a surprise for you guys. We have another email from Oswaldo Alcantara S. So, we're going to read the whole thing. The subject, Alexa,
play Free Fallin' by Tom Petty. If we wouldn't have to pay Tom Petty and really the record label a whole bunch of money, I would just play that song. But we don't want to give them free money. So good afternoon, Chris and Randy. I have a name now. So obviously I'm moving up in the Osvaldo rankings here. So that's good. I have three questions. But before the questions, I need to tell you guys the following. Bold. Yankees are cursed. Unbold. I was looking forward to seeing Dominguez in this lineup. But of course, in heavy Yankees fashion, Dominguez is out for 6 to 8 weeks with an oblique strain. And right after that, Stanton gets injured, jogging the bases. Smiley face? Also, need to let you know, jogging the bases is in all caps, italicized, and underlined. So my man hit mad commands for three words. And then hit us with a smiley face. Pereira would have been a good addition, but he's out for the year. Bold. It's time for a conversation about Alex Verdugo. Unbold. He can't be in a cleanup spot anymore. We've seen his collapses in the past years with the Red Enemy. Since May 23rd, Verdugo has an 89 WRC plus and a 289 WOBA. And those numbers are maximized because of that game against the Red Enemy last weekend. He has an under 700 OPS in both May and June. This is not it. They have no choice at all. Bryce just got up to the major leagues, and Torres has been abysmal. Who is coming to save the grace of the cleanup spot? Questions. In bold. Have the Yankees ever considered calling up Augustin Ramirez? Double A is the league to conquer, and he did that. Triple A environment is crazy. Two, bold. Has the organization ever shown a sense of urgency lately? Nestor Cortes said in his postgame interview that nobody's hanging their heads. Nobody's panicking. Italicize. This has Boone's fingertips all over it. Stop with the italics. This is unacceptable. Year 7 of nonsenses. Multiple and plural of nonsense. Bold. Is Jason Dominguez in injury-prone conversations? Unbold. You just can't suffer a grade 2 oblique strain on a check swing. I agree, Osvaldo. That is impossible for somebody to hurt their oblique swinging a bat. I thought this would be a 2 to 3 week thing. Mild strain. Shame on me. 6 to 8 weeks for that. Yankees luck in full force. From my perspective, he is injury prone. What do you guys think? Happy Sunday or Monday? Happy Monday to you, Osvaldo. I don't know if you're still the MD or not, but happy Monday to you. And thank you for supporting and listening to the podcast. We sincerely appreciate it. I love these emails. So I'm like, rolling with it. Too. But
I hope
thank you for listening.
I mean,
let's get to the first question.
Yeah, I mean, like the Verdugo one that's a fair thing to say for sure. I looked it up since May 1st. He has an 84 WRC plus. Now that's pretty big sample size. The one good thing about Verdugo is obviously he, you know, is really, really good defensively in left field. And that's a huge upgrade. Last year, but you know, the Yankees like the change of pace that he provided in the cleanup spot between Judge and Stanton. Maybe they will change that now that Stanton is going to be out for a few weeks. Perhaps they change the order around and get someone else in there, because it's not really, in my opinion, I don't think it's necessary to have him in the cleanup spot now that Stanton is out. So
yeah, but who do you put there,
though? Yeah, I mean, like there's no great option. There's no good option. Glaber, again, not good options. I don't know.
Do you put JD Davis there?
I guess, maybe.
I mean, that's where they're at right now with the personnel is, like, we're asking if J.D. Davis should be the cleaner.
Yeah, I mean, that's just the reality of the situation right now. It's like there are zero good options after Judge. Yeah. You have to hope that one or two of these guys get hot because that's just where they are right now.
Yeah, and I want to make clear, like, I know I've pointed out some things with, like, you know, injuries and it's part of baseball, but, I mean, these guys are also underperforming. Like, they're not playing well. Like, Verdugo's not hitting. Glaber's not hitting. Rizzo wasn't hitting. Like, some of these guys need to step up. Like, LeMahieu's been awful. Like, some of it is baseball and some of it is guys not doing their job well enough. So, I mean, I don't want to make it seem like just put this to the ebbs and flows of a baseball season. You also need to play well. And there's a bunch of guys that are just underperforming and that needs to change. And Osvaldo's right. Like, Verdugo is one of those guys. And I think he's going under the radar because of everything else that's going on. But he needs to start hitting soon. You know, he needs to contribute.
He has gone under the radar. He really has. I don't think anybody's been talking about Verdugo's bat. I can't recall any blow ups on social media about, you know, getting Verdugo out of there. I know people were calling for Jason Dominguez to come up, and obviously, like, if he did, he would have to replace Verdugo or Stanton. But I don't think it was because people were like, Verdugo stinks. Right. I think it's just because everybody's obsessed with Dominguez. But yeah, like, he hasn't hit recently. You know, we're now, that's near 2 month sample size of him being a below average bat. So right. Yeah, he needs to turn it around. So I think Osvaldo is completely fair to ask that question. He is not out of line. I think he's right.
Yeah, I agree with him. Okay. Have the Yankees ever considered calling up Augustin Ramirez?
No, not yet. Number one, if they were considering it too, he probably would have been up this week with a clear opening at DH. So I think they would like to see more out of him. He's obviously been special this year down in the minors. He is on the 40-man roster, so, you know, September, if Dominguez isn't ready, like, he would certainly be someone who would be in contention to get called up for sure. Like, if he continues swinging the way he has and, you know, we're still having these conversations of, like, the Yankees could use another bat, you know, they should certainly see if he is an answer to some of those problems with how well he's done. Because I don't think that Dominguez is, if Dominguez is ready, like, he's going to have to do a rehab assignment and all that. He's going to have to start over basically again.
I think his season's basically over.
Yeah. I don't think he is going to be with the Yankees in 2024, Dominguez, that is. So, and he was the obvious candidate to be the position player they called up on September 1st. I don't think that's going to be happening this time.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah.
So now I think Ramirez has probably become the number one contender to be the position player to get called up.
I believe he's off to a slow start in AAA. Not that that really means anything, I guess, but I don't think he was going to get a call up just because he's kind of gotten off to a slow start with the promotion. So,
and it's not going to be Spencer Jones.
No, it's not going to be Jones. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think if Ramirez was off to a hot start in AAA, then maybe they would have thought about it, but he started off slow so far. And
yeah, he's 1-16 right now in AAA.
And but I know
it doesn't mean he's a bust or anything. Like, before fans be like, oh my God, like, another bust. Like, it doesn't mean that. I still expect him to hit.
Yeah, so do I. You know, it's interesting. Osvaldo said the thing about AA and AAA and how the ABS system has impacted the way the Yankees evaluate their own prospects once they get to AAA, and how it could be a good thing or a bad thing. Like, you know, it demonstrates that they have a good eye, but also, you know, you're not really preparing for major league pitchers that will get strikes off the corners, and how you navigate an at bat doing that, and how that might have factored into Ben Rice being promoted rather quickly with him being at AAA. So I'm curious if there's an opportunity there with Ramirez at some point, once he starts hitting, that the Yankees also try to accelerate him. If, you know, if the situation calls for a potential promotion, that if Ramirez is hitting well, I wonder how much they just say, okay, let's just try finishing his development with the major league team, because there's certain nuances of the game that you just simply cannot get in AAA anymore with the change of the strike zone and the ABS system. So, I mean, it's a small detail, but, you know, it's something that could pop up down the road if the situation arises and Ramirez starts hitting on the AAA level.
But I certainly think he's going to be on the radar for September. He's someone to know. Caleb Durbin is another guy to know. You know, I think one of those guys, you know, if tomorrow was September 1st, I think one of those guys would be with the Yankees.
Yeah, I think unless they get hurt, I think we'll see one of them at some point. Okay, and then is Dominguez an injury-prone player? No.
No, I mean, there's – no. Yeah, hurt his elbow. I don't know how you can control that. And he hurt his oblique on a swing. Like, how many injuries has Judge had where they've been total flukes?
Yeah.
Like, does that mean Judge is injury prone because a pitcher hit him in the wrist one year? Is he injury prone because he ran into Dodger Stadium's wall? Is he injury prone because he also hurt his oblique on a swing? Like, some of the stuff, like, you just can't control.
I mean, the only person who's injury prone is Stanton.
Yeah, he's the only guy who I would say, like, 1,000%, I put my stamp on it, Giancarlo was injury prone.
Yeah, I mean, he was jogging around third base, and he's out for a month.
I mean, and Brian Cashman said it in November. Getting injured is part of his game, sadly. Just the reality of the situation. He lasted longer than, you know, I would have thought. I didn't think Stanton was going to be around at this point in the season. Like, you just know it's unfortunate, but Stanton has reached the point where, you know, going into the season, you can block out at least 4 weeks that Stanton's going to miss. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way his career turned out since Miami. You know, he was headed toward the Hall of Fame, certainly on a Hall of Fame trajectory, but injuries really derailed his career and the amount of production that he's been able to have over these past several years now.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you everybody for your questions. We appreciate it. Thank you for sending them in. You can find us. Well, actually, Chris, any last thoughts before we get out of here?
My knees are already hurting. I'm turning 32 tomorrow. my back is going a little bit. Old age is creeping up.
Yeah, man. That old age of 32 is going to get you, man. It's only going to go downhill from here.
Yeah, exactly.
So, well, thank you everybody for listening. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Please subscribe and download. You can also find us on YouTube. The channel is the same name as the podcast. Please leave us good reviews. We appreciate it. Thank you for checking us out, and we will speak to you all next week.